Remember your excitement the very first time a printer produced an elaborate document you had worked on? A book or a paper or a report with charts and illustrations. We don't think about printing much these days, but what if we had printer-like machines that could be instructed to make things using biology? Cells would go to work on some inputs we give them. They would carry out our instructions and produce something in the real world that we'd programmed. Exciting. Well, Professor Drew Endy and some students at Stanford and Berkeley are starting to think about biology in this way. Endy is the co-director of the International Open Facility Advancing Biotechnology. They call it BioFab. And he says getting cells to follow programs and make things is not just some hallucination he came up with from eating magic mushrooms.
The most amazing day I've had recently was a field trip down towards Monterey. I went to a farm called Far West Fungi. And they grow mushrooms on this farm. The input to the farm is sawdust. I was introduced to the farm by an artist out of San Francisco named Phil Ross. And Phil had been doing this incredible work where he's, practically speaking, growing furniture from sawdust. So what happens is you mix up a wood fungus, which normally degrades trees in the forest, with sawdust. And in a 72-hour period, the fungus will grow into the sawdust to make a solid object. And then you bake that to kill the fungus, and you can varnish it to finish it so it has a nice surface and so on and so forth. That structurally, it's incredibly strong. So if I had my druthers, I would love to be able to bring a little bit of engineering into wood fungi. If we could put a little bit of genetic data storage and computing and cell-cell communication, what that would let us do is complement what the art community can do now, which is shape how the fungus grows. We could complement that with bottom-up self-assembly doing microscopic pattern formation. And I'd now be able to go back to my house, and with the family, we'd be able to grow stuff that we wanted, tiny things, big things, the patio furniture, all from the yard waste, the garden clippings that right now we simply set out in the bin on the street and throw away.
That's Professor Drew Endy getting unnaturally excited about patio furniture over a principle that's much bigger than a lounge chair made out of mushrooms. BioFab is developing an open-source language for getting cells to custom-construct proteins the way DNA makes life. It's an advance in biotech that goes beyond exotic lab work and literally uses printers to direct cells to construct all of the materials that can only be made biologically, but they can have the beauty of rainbows and the strength of titanium.
You know, genetic engineering was invented 40 years ago in part at Stanford and elsewhere in California, and we've actually outlawed genetic engineering in the laboratory. So our students don't use the tools of the 1970s to cut and paste or splice genes together. Instead, what we're using is we're using DNA printers that are actually derived from inkjet printers. So if you think of an inkjet printer for printing a piece of paper, we can take that same technology and sputter out little droplets of chemicals containing DNA in solution, and that allows us to print a molecule of DNA from scratch. So our students now become designers of DNA, working on a computer as if they had a word processor, manipulating genetic functions in the abstract, and then we use software tools to compile that down to a sequence of bases, letters, A's, T's, C's, and G's. That gets shipped over the internet to a DNA printer, DNA synthesizer at a company. DNA gets compiled from scratch. Material comes back through FedEx or UPS, and the students are able to take that DNA and they return it into the cell and connect it up to the processes of the cell.
Is the difference between a centralized technology, as you've described it, and a distributed technology all about whether we approach biotech and synthesize DNA from a patent model where we patent everything and think of it all as intellectual property, or if we open source everything and think of it as completely public domain?
Those two topics are likely to be coupled, but there are ways to manage it. You know, I think it more has to do with what people, what we want to do and what we want to have responsibility for. You know, so would you like to live in a world where it might be the case that you could take ownership of what's baking in your bread machine at home if you could reprogram the yeast to make a number of other things, therapeutic molecules, what have you, for yourself or your family? Or would you like to have centralized manufacturing of all of the therapies? Could you imagine a future where a perfume company designs a biosynthesis pathway and that causes fragrances to be made genetically. Instead of shipping chemicals in a bottle that you slather on your skin, that company could upload the sequence information to something like iTunes, and you could download that sequence information, synthesize the DNA, and transform the microbial ecologies that live on your skin. You'd have a living fragrance, if you will. So I think the openness and the coupling to the centralization or not, that can be managed. What's unknown is what people will want, how people want to interact with biology and biotechnology. Is it something that we want to wall off and have it, you know, contained in very professional closed gardens, if you will, or is this a technology of the people?
All right. So if BioFab becomes ubiquitous and its track record for creating really useful stuff is second nature, I'm thinking if you could get ceramics involved here and some microbe that could work with ceramics, you guys could genetically code your own mountain bikes.
So think about the abalone. Think about the sponges. You know, there's sponges in the ocean that actually grow fiber optic cables. The abalone shell is an incredible material. So biology already couples the organic world to the inorganic world. And you know, one of the reasons as an engineer, I and others find biology compelling and why we work on these tools that practically have the aim of making it easier to engineer biology is we are optimistic that there's a chance to reinvent how our civilization makes things. You know, instead of firing up fossil fuels and other petro-based processes and trashing the environment when we manufacture all the stuff we need, could we partner better with biology to make stuff in an environmental friendly way? We're very far off from doing that for everything our civilization needs. We have no chance of doing that unless we make it easier to engineer biology and do that in a responsible way. But I think you're absolutely correct, right? The biological world doesn't make just living things. It makes inorganic things, and we can partner through those chemistries to make a number of objects. A mountain bike be a little bit of a ways off, but something to dream about for sure.
Well, I'm certainly going to dream about a abalone shell wheelchair that I could have sometime in the future.
There you go. You should be dreaming big and trying to figure out what the right things to make are going to be.
Drew Endy, thanks so much.
John, thank you very much. Have a great day.
I certainly will. Drew Endy is co-director of the International Open Facility Advancing Biotechnology, BioFab, and assistant professor at Stanford University.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.